Welcome to The Lowdown, KMXT's show dedicated to giving you the up-to-date information we have available on the COVID-19 outbreak and how it's impacting life on Kodiak Island. The Lowdown will focus on facts as provided to us by local and state officials. During the show, we give you access to these local experts who have information on COVID-19 and recommendations related to it. If you have a question for our guests, please email it to lowdown@kmxt.org or call KMXT at 486-3181.
And good morning. Welcome to The Lowdown, special episode of The Lowdown. We have representatives from the Kodiak Island Borough School District Administration team. My name is Jared Griffin. I'm your host this morning. I'm joined with Dylan Samard from KMXT News. And also in the studio with us, this will probably be the last time we actually maybe have people in the studio with us, because we'll be closing down the building here. So at least for a while. So we're joined here with Dr. Larry Ledoux, Superintendent of Schools, Jeff Smith, Assistant Superintendent of Schools, and Kim Saunders, Director of Special Services. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for spending your time and sharing some of your knowledge with us today. Dylan and I have questions from that we've culled from the KMXT News and from the public, and you can still call in 486-3181 or send your questions to lowdown@kmxt.org, and we will try to get your listener questions on the air. So we'll just go ahead and start with the big controversial question that you addressed in yesterday's email and yesterday's announcement: universal masking in schools following Anchorage School District Superintendent Dina Bishop's announcement of a policy of universal masking in ASD buildings. KIBSD made a made a similar decision. So what is the policy now, and what prompted it?
Thanks for the question. I receive this question all the time, and I think what prompted it was the trajectory of the contagion in our community. The numbers are quite startling. The contagion of the Delta variant is causing us concern, and you know, my primary responsibility, besides making sure that all of our students are educated to engage in life, is to keep them safe and our staff. And given the degree of contagion and how it's growing in our state, in our community, and nationally, I think we've had to take this step. It's very disappointing. I think 2 weeks ago, I announced a mitigation plan that while requiring masks at the K-5 level or the preschool through K-5 level, it would be optional at Kodiak High School. So we said at that time that if the circumstances of COVID in our community increased, that we would respond accordingly. And I'm hoping that this increased, this universal mask mandate will not be with us long. And I can assure you that as soon as we feel it's safe to do so, we will move these mitigations out of the way.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get into the details of it. So, kids with any symptoms, even if no close contact, are they still going to be asked to stay home and provide a negative COVID test before returning to school?
I think that the best way to control it in the schools is to make sure that kids who have symptoms do not attend school. And just because they have symptoms does not mean that they have the disease. There's a lot of other childhood maladies, if you will, that mimic COVID. But yes, if a child is feeling sick or a staff member is feeling sick or having symptoms that are not normal, we would ask them to stay home and go get a COVID test. And they're readily available in our community through a number of medical providers. And that worked very well last year. Yes. And I think it really contributed to keeping our schools safe.
Another item that we were curious about was that in the material that was provided by the school district, you guys mentioned that there are kinds of exceptions that can be made in students' IEPs for the mask wearing. Can you guys go into detail about under what circumstances that sort of thing would be permissible?
Well, not everybody can wear a mask, and there are young people that their doctors say for whatever reason they cannot wear them. Generally speaking, the medical community on the national level says that most kids can wear masks, and some of the, but it just depends on the student, and it's a decision between a family and their doctor on whether that's going to cause a problem. Generally speaking, though, last year we found that almost everybody was able to wear a mask with very, very few exceptions along the way.
Okay. So another thing that we were interested about, is this school still made aware during contact tracing about close contacts for students?
Well, you know, where whether you're immunized or not is not a protected piece of information. Whether you're positive or, you know, what you're testing is a medical, and that's protected. So the only way that we can really receive information is if through public health at the state level or that parents tell us. We have found in almost every case that parents have been very cooperative and have let us know that there's a positive contact or that their child is positive or that somebody in their family is. So we've had a great deal of cooperation. Frankly, if we didn't have that level of cooperation from families, it would be very difficult to keep our schools safe.
I'm wondering if you can explain the 90-day exemption item. If someone receives a positive COVID test within the past 90 days, they don't have to quarantine after a close contact. What's the medical opinion that you've received on that? I think that's kind of a new addition to the school district policy.
It's a little bit new, but there's an assumption that if you've had COVID, that you've developed an immunity commensurate with if you were vaccinated. Although the literature seems to indicate, like everything else regarding COVID, that there's no surety about that. So essentially, it just means that they treat you the same way as if you were immunized.
Mm-hmm. Listener has this question. Is there going to be any, or what kinds of disciplinary action for kids and staff who come to school knowingly positive or knowingly a close contact?
Well, it's a requirement for your job that you wear a mask and that you contribute. If somebody doesn't tell us, I don't think that's ever occurred to us, and so it's not something we've really considered, but we expect professional behavior from professional staff members, and I think that we've had 100% cooperation from staff members. I think as far as students, you know, I think they've done a good job too, and I think parents of those students have done a good job letting us know. We were open more than most schools in the state last year, and mm-hmm. that only occurred because we had a wide level of cooperation in our community, not just among students attending school or staff members, but people in the community masking up, taking care, staying home when they're sick, and following those guidelines. And I have no reason to believe it's going to be any different this year. Kodiak is strong because we work together as a community, not because we had to or because people were afraid of what might happen. I think people did the right thing because it was the right thing to do, and I think that's sort of really neat about our community.
Can you explain the asymptomatic screening testing program?
Well, I'll step into that. The medical community, nationally and statewide, indicates that if we are going to have kids in school, that finding out if children or staff members are COVID positive but not showing symptoms will help us prevent it coming into the school. The problem with, you know, we have 2,200 students. It takes about 15 minutes just to do the test. And then you add the organizational time to bring them the personnel necessary to coordinate. It would be, frankly, impossible to do that. We would lose probably a day and a half of instruction. So what we'll be doing, it's our attempt to test about 10 to 15% of our students every week voluntarily. And these would be, you know, at the elementary level, that would be all students because they're not vaccinated. At the secondary level, it would just be students who are not vaccinated. And we would do it with parent permission. And we've been exploring a program where the company sends test kits right to the house, and the parents carry out the test in their home, in the privacy of their home, and they fill in their results on their smartphone, if you will, or their computer, and it's sent in. We want to make it easy, but if we don't use that mechanism, then we feel that we can easily do that. If we, you know, let's say that, I'm not going to do the math properly, but let's say 2,200 students, if we were doing 10%, that would be 222 students a week. You spread that over in the town schools, you know, six schools. It's not a big, and we don't do them all on the same day. So if North Star had to do 50 in a week, they would do 10 a day. It's easily something they could do. And there's been some information to indicate that this kind of screening will pick up kids who have COVID but are asymptomatic. We're hoping to test half of our staff every week.
Oh, wow.
And we started that last year, and it's voluntary. But also, every once in a while, we do pick up a positive case. And many kids are asymptomatic and COVID carriers. So we think this is a good way to do it.
As a follow-up, how is the school going to make sure that it's not a minority of students providing a majority of the tests? How are you going to keep it rotating through the student population so that you don't have a group of kids who are just volunteering, or their parents are volunteering them to take the test every week?
Well, that's a good question. And we've actually, hopefully we'll have enough students that it will be a random sample every week. Also, we'll be testing all of our traveling activity personnel. For instance, if the drama club travels, we will test all of them before they leave. And any team coming in here will have to test before they come into Kodiak. And those will be sort of the rapid asymptomatic testing. And I think, you know, when all's said and done and you average it out, we'll be testing a large number of students as part of our effort to keep kids safe. And the good thing now, I think, at least from my point of view, is initially when you were taking those tests, it would feel like they were massaging your brain with that probe.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
You know, and nowadays, you know, with the card test, it's 3 seconds of a swirl that the student could do in their own nose and 3 in the other, and you're done.
Right.
And so it's much easier to test. It's not as big a deal. And we think it'll help kids safe. But again, it's voluntary at this point.
I think the importance of the school district in providing food and meals to students and families was made very clear during the pandemic. Studies, national studies have shown that these large-scale free meal programs help keep families out of poverty. I was talking that I saw something that it helps improve math performance. It reduces disciplinary issues overall, particularly among male students. At the same time, the school cafeterias last year were not operational for food service and, you know, student congregation at meals. How does the district plan to handle breakfast and lunch service in the year ahead?
Well, first off, you know, we learned many years ago you can't teach a hungry student. So, and it's safe to say that we've had hungry students in Kodiak, and our food service program, our breakfast and lunch program, has helped a number of people. What we've learned through the non-congregate feeding, or feeding the whole community, if you will, between age, you know, 2 and 18, is that there's a lot of hungry people in our town. And we have served hundreds of thousands of meals and delivered them since COVID started. And that will end once we start school, because the federal government through the state has said if we're open, we can't serve, you know, everybody from 1 and 18. What's interesting this year is that we'll be able to provide a free lunch to every student attending school. So there will be no charges for our lunch program this year. So it's very important. I think the lunch program last year when we were closed provided stability for families. Parents would say that, you know, their kids running out to get a bag from the bus that was delivering or waiting for that lunch was very, very important in providing stability, that, you know, that there's something that they could hang on to. So we are going to continue to do it. Within schools, one of the things that we have to be able to do is to maximize social distancing. And so each principal will be looking at how they're going to serve kids. Last year, they ate in their classrooms, and we want to get them out as much as possible. And so instead of 6 feet, it's 3 feet. So we think we'll be able to feed them and spread them out and provide the social interaction that really is what lunch is all about if you're a child. And so we'll be looking at that at each school. And it could be, frankly, that some of them will continue to eat in their classrooms. But it's our intent to serve more home-cooked type meals this year and to get back to some sense of normalcy in the school. But like many things related to COVID, we're just going to have to see how it goes and make decisions as we go along and those kinds of things.
The federal funding for the universal meal program, I think, is going to sunset next year, 2022. Do you think that this is something that might be here to stay?
I hope so. If we have any feedback from the community, as I said, we have hungry kids and we want to take care of them. Before COVID, we decided to feed kids over spring break and over the holiday vacation. And we found that it was well received and, again, very needed. Clearly, we have families that are have been impacted financially by the COVID throughout the community. So one of the things that we'll be doing this year, it's not related to mitigation, but it's related to being responsive to the needs of our parents, is we've waived all fees. We are buying all school supplies. You won't go into Walmart and see a list of what a child needs at North Star or Peterson or East or Main or the high school. There are no class fees at the high school. So if you take, there's no lab fees if you take welding or photography. There were no fees in activities. If you join an activity, there will be no fees. If you're taking an AP exam, you will not be charged for the AP exam, and those are growing, and we're pleased about that. So we're using federal money to sort of fill the gap so that there will be no fees. If we learned anything last year, and we learned a lot, is to really concentrate on equity in our system, that it's school is difficult for a lot of reasons not related to school for kids. And we're trying to address those. And we don't want any student not to participate in football or drama or key club because of a fee, or to avoid taking a career tech class because their family doesn't have the money. Mm-hmm. We'll do whatever's necessary to support kids. And there's positive components of every tragedy, if you will. And one of them is that we recognize that as a district, as a community, we need more to provide support for all of our students if we're going to reach our goals. And it's been exciting because a lot of our planning is not related just to safety, but it's how to take care of our kids during COVID and long into the future. So we're going to be a different district when COVID is done because we've learned a lot, and we're trying to be responsive. And I think Kim and Jeff can, if we get questions related to those kinds of things, I think Kim and Jeff can speak to the impact on kids.
I had two follow-up questions to the effect of the lunch program. As it stands right now, say you have a student who's both receiving free or reduced price lunch from the school and is unvaccinated, perhaps by choice, perhaps by virtue of young age. If, for whatever reason, that student were asked to quarantine at home, would they then lose access, the way it stands now, to the free and reduced price lunch program, or is there a way for them to get service while they're quarantining at home?
If there was a family that was quarantined that requested lunches, we would deliver them right to their house. That's just what we do. It's, when we look at our district, we talk about district, we talk about broad things, but really the only thing that's really important is a single student. There's no success or failure academically or physically or health-wise greater than one student. It's kids, individual kids. If they have that need, we will serve them.
That's very good to hear. My second follow-up question, and this might be something that people in the community know in general, and perhaps I don't, but when I went to high school, we were allowed to have off-campus lunch. Now, granted, that's a completely different issue in the context of a pandemic. So are students currently allowed to get lunch off campus? And if so, is there any sort of restriction that you'd impose on them for, you know, they need a mask up when they go get lunch somewhere else or what have you?
Well, you touch on a number of points. We have an open campus at the high school. And I think kids, we've had that for many, many years, and we have no intention to change it. The other thing to keep in mind when you're working with secondary students, you never impose a rule that you can't enforce. Okay, that's just the bottom line.
Yep.
And but I would like to say, too, when you treat kids with respect, they respond with respect. And I think our administration has developed or is developing a relationship with kids where they have a lot of authority, where the kids respect them, and they will generally do if they're asked, versus a relationship in a school where principals operate from power, lots of rules, and you do the crime, you do the time. And then you get into a cops and robbers thing with kids. And I guarantee if when that happens, you have no control. But I believe we have a lot of our authority. And do I believe all kids wear their masks away from the high school? No way. Do I know a lot of them do? Yes. And I think that, like I said, our kids have been very cooperative. You know, if you walked into one of our schools last year, and parents really didn't have that opportunity because we were closed up, but I visit schools regularly, and it just looks like regular school. Kids are laughing. Mm-hmm. They're being noisy in the lines, you know, that they form. They're just being kids. The only difference is they have masks on. Otherwise, it looks just the same.
Actually, as a follow-up to that effect, and this is, I guess, a less serious COVID question, but I have been shocked to drive around, and even in December when COVID was pretty severe, I would see, like, kids outside playing who were all wearing masks in the company of one another while being outside, which I thought was quite remarkable that the... It seems that the severity and the seriousness of the pandemic has been successfully impressed upon kids. I think that they understand that, like, this is a big deal, and we do these things in the interest of ensuring health and well-being for as many people as possible. So how would you characterize the way that students have responded to the pandemic? I mean, we're a year in now. Some kids may or may not have had the opportunity for in-person graduation. I know that varies from school to school and community to community, but what is the morale like?
Well, I would say that kids don't want to wear masks. I don't mean to infer that, and our staff would rather not wear masks. I think that the staff and students recognize the need.
Right.
The older they are, the more they understand it. The kids are very resilient, and as long as we're consistent. But as I said, the principals have not had to be mask police. You'll have kids that pull their masks down over their nose and will say, put it up. You know, I don't know if anybody's been suspended for not wearing it. If we had a student that refused to wear it, then there would be accountability. But I think, as I said, kids have responded very, very well. And I'll say this, you know, there's a lot of fog this morning, but we all knew it wouldn't be there. And COVID occupied a lot of our thoughts last year. It is not going to control us. And we're talking about the start of the school year, and we're talking about COVID medications. But it's going to be a great year, and we have a lot going on besides COVID. And we're not going to let COVID define our year or the morale of our kids or our staff. We have dreams and plans to move forward, and COVID is not going to dominate what we do. Right now, it's just a thing that we have to deal with, and we're going to work with parents, our teachers, and our aides, and our staff, and our students, and our whole community to get through this. And so we're very positive, at least as our administrative team, and I think our teachers are too. You know, I am so proud of our staff. You know, when people were hunkered down in their homes and not leaving, our cooks were in their career preparing thousands of meals, and if you peeked in the door, they would be singing as they did it. And this is when no one else was working. And our teachers, who came every day and were around hundreds of kids, they came, even though many of them were frightened. And our community has been there in every way. Morale, you know, I couldn't be more proud. Is there fear? Yes, there's a certain amount of unknown. Every day there's a new study, there's a new concern, they're conflicting. But I think we're going to be okay. We have a great program plan. We have some great initiatives that we're moving forward on. And frankly, you know, even though we're concerned with COVID, I have a great COVID intervention team. We have a full-time nurse. We have lots of support from our medical community, and that's in place. And we're going to be able to respond to anything that happens with COVID, I believe, with fidelity and thoughtfulness. But that is not going to define us this year. We have to, we're implementing a brand new math program. That's a concern. We've got to improve. We're in the second and third year now of a new ELA program. And we're really focusing on, and Kim can talk about that, some of the things that we're doing to support social emotional needs of our kids, which are deep, and our staff to keep them healthy. So what's really occupying all of my time right now, because I have so many good people working on COVID, is how we can keep moving forward, because we're not where we want to be, and we weren't where we want to be before COVID. And we have some great things planned this year that are going to involve the community and students that will change us forever, I believe. So yeah, I'm feeling really happy about where we're going, and I've got an incredible administrative team, and I'd rather let them do some talking because, you know.
Well, let's talk about the social emotional health, you know, that was widely cited by educators and families, and even from like coaches like me, I heard it from more parents than I've ever heard from before. As an area of concern for students and staff also, you know, this past year. So where does social-emotional education fit into K-12 education? What resources have you added to meet this concern? And is this one for Kim?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Drop the ball. So many things. I think social-emotional learning and the just basic welfare and needs of children are always on the forefront of our minds as we plan, and it continues to be so, and only were exacerbated or exemplified during COVID. So I think we've added a social worker, a full-time social worker to the school district, team of people who are responding to family needs and student needs, increasing counseling support by sort of shifting responsibilities and jobs so that counselors can really focus on meeting one-on-one or in groups with students specifically at every building. We're increasing early learning by adding a preschool classroom because we know that early intervention is probably the best thing that we can do to support and help students grow. So there's just a lot of different efforts on that, in that front. And I think also making sure that we're using high quality resources to teach some skills, teach coping actively. And probably the most exciting thing for me as an administrator and somebody who really kind of focuses in this domain professionally is the review of our health curriculum that we're going to dig into. And health keeps saying the word health sort of doesn't do it justice. It's more of a whole child, whole student approach and way we're gonna think about health in general. How are we responding to mental health, social health, digital health, and then physical health, the more traditional domains that fall in a health curriculum. So we'll be doing that review and have a health curriculum review coordinator who's going to help pull the community into that process and really take a look at how are we addressing the needs of the entire student, pre-K, post-secondary, really. So there's so many things, but I'm excited about all of them.
And what other how is COVID going to change social-emotional education in the long term?
Oh, I think, as Dr. Ledoux said, we just learned a lot. And we know that isolation isn't good for kids, right? It's a well-known fact, I think, and well-researched. And it impacts them in many, many different ways. And if you take stressors, you know, some people refer to the ACEs study or the adverse childhood experiences. Now kids have increased numbers of those adverse childhood experiences in a lot of ways, and we have shared trauma, they have individual trauma. When you increase stress on a family unit, financially, if they're hungry, if they have exposure to neglect or abuse, or there's domestic violence increases, all of those things kids feel dramatically. And what we also know is that safe, calm, happy kids can learn. So if we can't address those things head on and teach them how to be more resilient and how to cope with some of those stressors, then we're going to be fighting an uphill battle to teach them to read, for instance. So I think it's just in the forefront of our mind. How do we be trauma engaged? How do we respond to kids' needs? And also, how do we recognize their incredible strengths and the things that they bring to the table that allow them to grow every day? So I think it's going to impact everything we do, quite frankly.
All right. Now, those were the easy questions. Let's dive into the others. If you're just now joining us, we're on the Lowdown. You're listening to the Lowdown. We have Larry Ledoux, Kim Saunders, and Jess Smith from the Kodiak Island Borough School District here answering some questions about the upcoming school year. With the rise in the Delta variant, and we've received many questions on this, what would it take to go back to remote learning? Is it still on the table?
Well, certainly,
go ahead.
Certainly it is. I think that we have the capability to fully remote. We certainly showed that last year. And I had a meeting with the commissioner several days ago. And if we need to do further training in servicing to prepare our staff, then we'll be ready to do that. But yes, we could go to remote learning if necessary. And like many things, it will depend on the degree of the impact of COVID on our community, on families, on businesses, on our staff. We have to keep our staff and students safe. So anytime we make a decision, it's a group decision. We rely on information from the federal government. It's not gospel, but it certainly is data that we use. We talk regularly with the Alaska Department of Health, and we have a really, as I said earlier, a really great relationship. And we have a local medical community that we listen to, and also we listen to parents. We get a lot of information from parents and what they feel and, you know, how, what their point of view is, and they're very different. But within that group, we feel that we can make a decision to make adjustments either way if we have to. And if it's recommended and we feel it's in the best interests of our students to do so, then we will. I will tell you, we don't want to. It's not the best way to deliver education. I think we do it better than anyone else, but I still don't think it's a good way to educate kids. Kids need to be around other kids. And as Kim indicated, we start seeing real heavy-duty social-emotional challenges related to kids who can't be around their peers. I want to send this to Jeff because he's sort of our district with Kim behaviorists and works with kids and the effect of this kind of thing on them. So Jeff, maybe you could comment.
Well, I would add to a couple of things that Kim was speaking about earlier with our students.
Hold on just a second, Jeff. We're not picking you up on the mic. Let's see.
You want to borrow mine?
Sure.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, I would just add to a little bit of what Kim was sharing and speaking to earlier with regards to social-emotional learning. And I think one of the things that we've looked at for students and for families, even this summer with our partnership with Providence Mental Health Clinicians and our Clinicians to the School program, is extending that partnership to cover services over the summer for students, making sure that we're responsive to the families and students' needs even during those summer months. And I think that carries on even if you end up looking at a remote model for this coming school year, if that's what the contagion in the community indicates may need to transition to for a period of time, making sure that those services and those relationships are maintained, whether you're in the building or you're in your living room. Obviously, we'd rather be in the building than in our home, and that's our number one priority as we keep staff and students safe. But making sure that those services are continuous for those students, regardless of where their program's going to occur at.
Mm-hmm. Following up on that, you know, several school districts across the state had record numbers of kids. I'm thinking of Anchorage that were not ready to graduate due to shutdowns. Had, you know, higher numbers of D's and F's, but our schools were open for much of the year. So how did our students do? How did they compare to other school districts? And especially, you know, this summer, you know, Anchorage, they had thousands of kids in their summer school program. But so you brought that up, Jeff. So yeah, so how did they do? Comparably speaking. Go for it. Look on. I've got the mics.
I don't have statistics right in front of me with regards to overall graduation rate from the high school at the end of last year, and I don't know that information off the top of my head. Perhaps one of the other folks in the room could speak to that. I would echo with regards to what other districts in the state of Alaska did, and in other districts that I'm familiar with around in the lower 48. Our summer programs this year were very comprehensive and very in-depth, providing services for students, you know, pre-K-12, whether that was through an extended school year program or our intensive programs or some reading and math kind of academies that were geared for some of our elementary age students. I think they were well attended, and we just continued that program into the summer months for those students just for that need, in terms of areas that they may have had deficits in their learning from last school year. Mm-hmm. And I think we, like we've said earlier, I think we've learned a lot from last school year, so that if this year we do have to make those transitions again, I think we're better prepared to do that, and it'll be something that'll be seamless for us to be able to move forward to make sure that we're still meeting the academic and emotional needs of our students.
I just want to add, we haven't had really a chance to talk to the public about some of the programs that we're putting in place to address, you know, learning loss that some kids felt.
Yeah.
And we would probably see that in our homeschool program as parents for the first time tried to become teachers. And many of them said after that experience, we don't pay teachers enough. And we also had a remote program that had over 350 kids. So we had almost 500 of our young people not in the traditional school. And that was new for them. And anytime you change the mode of instruction, you're going to have a certain degree of regression or increased learning loss that you can regain, but it's there. Also, the opening and closing of the regular school, kids who are close contacts, all of them interfere with learning and, you know, that trajectory that we want kids to keep be on. So some of the things that we're doing, and I probably won't be able to name them all because there are many, after meeting with parents and talking to our staff and our students, we're going to be doing a number of things this year. And we'll be using federal funds, you know, to pay for this. And we're going to be implementing a pretty comprehensive employee health and wellness program to make sure that we're tending to our staff. This has been a very, very difficult year for our staff, whether you're a custodian, having to spray down the buildings and, you know, dress up in protective gear, or a teacher that is, you know, getting up every day trying to worry about how their own kids are being educated versus, it's just a really tough year, and our staff has been great. But we're going to work on that and make sure we provide support. We're going to do a lot of targeted support, and targeted support generally means individual. To really look at the data, we have some really good formative assessments where we can find out really where kids are on any given day. And we're going to be using that data to, you know, design programming. We're opening up a family resource center. One of the things that we learned is many of our parents were not involved or haven't been involved for a variety of reasons, sometimes work schedules, sometimes cultural, sometimes whatever. But we are going to be using our funds to open up a resource center downtown that will be open in the evening where parents can go and receive information that they need. Some of them are uncomfortable coming into the school, and we're going to be trying to make sure that we include all of our families. We're adding an additional preschool. And a good question to ask Kim is, how did the COVID epidemic affect our littles, our preschool age students, and how we're responding to that? We're going to be, as Jeff indicated, we've added therapeutic counseling over the summer because you can't just stop the services to kids when school's out. And so we have a contract to take care of that. We've hired a health coordinator to help us work through our whole child health review. As I've said, we're paying for all supplies. We're buying filters. We're buying masks. I mean, we're doing a whole lot of things to provide support. The high school will be open up until 8 o'clock at night for kids to come into the commons and study. Similar program in the middle school, and callback programs at the elementary school. So kids who need individual help will be able to come back and get direct services. And this is all related to trying to meet the needs of every child. We have translators now who are translating our communication. We'll do what's necessary to meet the needs of kids. I'm feeling sort of excited about the whole thing. And a lot of these things, we're trying to find a way to make sure that when we don't have this federal money, we can continue these things without increasing our budget. Mm-hmm. So we're being very, very thoughtful that we don't create a budgetary cliff mm-hmm. that will create an expectation that when the money comes, that we'll just be able to fill it. And can I refer to Kim at this point?
Yes,
just
yeah,
to talk
we,
about
we have
levels?
That on our
can
list.
Can I ask one quick follow-up before we stray too far from the subject? The in regards to whether or not going back to remote learning would ever be on the table again, do you guys have any sort of matrix, like if we hit X case positivity in your regular weekly testing, if like the community risk level raises to a certain point? I'm just wondering about that.
Well, you know, it would make my life a lot easier if life or COVID was really black and white or algorithmic. So you could say that if we have 9 cases in a week, we're going to close. But every case has a story to it. Every positive result has a story that you have to look at. If I have 15 cases in a family, does that mean I should close the schools if we have 9 cases? So you see the problem with saying, right. So we have to look at it. And again, we'll look at that data through the eyes of our different groups that support us. You know, CDC, the Alaska Department of Health, our local medical community. They will advise us. And they did last year, and we did pretty good, you know, riding the wave of COVID. And so do we look at the number of cases? Absolutely. But then we break it down. And we're lucky enough to have the superintendent's assistant and the school board secretary who works for the Emergency Operations Center. So so she, along with a borough representative, sort of got the information directly. So we get information really quick on where we are. But again, those are just numbers, and we're dealing with people, and we're dealing with a situation where there's no clear math direction. I wish there were. But there isn't. But we do take it into account, but there's lots that we have to look at.
Okay, understood.
I lost track.
Yeah, so let's take it to the littles. So the preschool program is something relatively new to the school district. How did it fare last year? And what are you looking at for the coming year for pre-K?
Well, we're able to expand capacity, basically, and offer preschool to more children. So just increasing the number of students that can attend by a classroom. Preschool in our school, in the district, works, so it's a 4-day-a-week program, just 2.5 hours a day, and there's a morning session and an afternoon session every day. So we're excited to be able to just have more kiddos. That additional classroom now is at the central office, so connected physically to Kodiak mm-hmm. High School. And I'm hoping if COVID stays at bay a little bit, we can get high school students into those classrooms working with kids and learning more about development, things like that. So it's really a high impact on little kids. COVID has all the reasons I talked about before, related to trauma and things like that, but also socialization for young children and language development are the two early indicators for literacy, mm-hmm. right? So you're not going to learn to read if you don't learn how to talk well or be spoken to. That receptive and expressive language has to come in. And I think COVID just impacted. There were more screens. People were trying to work from home. So how are you, handling your 3-year-old who is climbing on you simultaneously?
Yes.
it's just been a struggle in general. And then if kids aren't around one another to engage socially and play, that early play impacts their education dramatically. So trying to backfill a little bit of that for this group of kiddos who maybe missed their time at the playground. Mm. So to speak, I think is a big part of that effort. Also, parent, we're going to call it empowerment now because I hate the term training, but trying to look for opportunities to really support families and do more family training opportunities through the early childhood program is a big part of what we're going to work on this year, too.
There's the preschool, and Larry, you mentioned a lot of programs. What about in terms of curriculum? Is the school district looking at ways to incorporate COVID and pandemic-related issues into the actual curriculum? Science classes, statistics classes, public health, you know, even writing and civics?
I suspect, you know, I can't answer that directly, but I suspect that teachers are talking with their kids about it in advisory, and I would say I know they are. They talk about a lot of issues. Kids listen to the radio. They are experiences in real time, and school is where they can talk about those issues that are important to them. So I think, you know, we're all learning with COVID, and the kids are learning as we learn.
And I imagine to some extent it'll shape the new health curriculum revision. I mean, it's basically the impetus for this new health curriculum position and initiative, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's not. We're reviewing, you know, I don't really want to call it the health curriculum. I'd rather call it the whole student, whole community, whole family type program, because in the past, the health review just talked about health, and it was rather controversial, and most districts avoided health curriculum because parents were very concerned about what content you're teaching, what values that they think you're teaching, and they rightly so were concerned that we were sort of taking responsibility for very important topics from them. And so whenever they did it, there was a lot of discussion, rigorous discussion. But, you know, our review is going to be looking at physical education. So part of our health review, if you will, is going to look at our complete physical education program, K-12. And I'm supposed to say pre-K through 12, so mm-hmm. Kim will have to forgive me for
right,
that lapse.
Correct.
Changing 30 years of K-12. So we'll be looking at physical education. We'll be having a group look at nutrition. We've had a lot of concerns about the quality of our lunches, and the board has directed that we set up a foods committee mm-hmm. and take a look at nutrition. And this is, again, preschool through 12. We have to talk more about social-emotional. We're seeing it in the behavior of our kids and some of the trauma that they're bringing to schools. We need to talk about it. We need to look at the social-emotional climate as a group. And a social-emotional climate would look at everything from bullying to the environment, so kids don't have to walk through the hallways, you know, worried about what someone might say or someone might touch or do to them. So that's going to look at the environment. So our secondary schools are looking at restorative justice as a way of working with kids and trying to do a preventive discipline. We have a great counseling program, therapeutic, and we've increased our counseling support, but we've never really addressed it into the curriculum, mm-hmm. how to be healthy, how to deal with your own depression if you have it, or how to help kids, you know, be healthy that way. We also, as part of our whole student, we have to keep in mind the health of our staff. And we haven't really talked about that, really. And COVID is prompting that we're paying a lot more attention to all of our staff members. And we also know that as we go through this review, we're going to be looking at how our community can be involved. You know, so much of what we do that's really exciting involves other agencies or people willing to come and work with us. But we've never integrated that support mm-hmm. into our program. So it's been hit or miss or based on the teacher. And we have to be inviting to our community. And finally, as we do this kind of review, we really need to engage our families. You know, we're a bureaucracy. We're not all-knowing. We serve our community, and we have to involve our community. But I will say this. What's different in the health program this year is people used to argue about the content, the values, if you will. We don't teach values. We should be teaching content. But it was when we teach it, how we teach, when do we talk about sex education, what do we say, what age, who does it. You know, parents, rightly so, saying, we want to know more about that. Okay, and we want them to be involved. But what's interesting now that's very different is that I usually would hold up a phone, but any child that has a phone can examine anything they want at any time with no regulations. Mm-hmm. So parents who were concerned about when you would talk about human reproduction, well, guess what? Kids can find out anything they want. So kids have full access to all information and they're not talking to their parents about it. So if you're looking at something you're not supposed to look at, or reading something you're not supposed to read, or talking to someone you're not supposed to talk to, kids are not going to go tell their parents they're doing this. So what's happening is kids are getting a lot of information uncontrolled, and nobody's talking to them about it, because kids aren't going to parents, and it's the new technology is, you know, going so fast that parents, kids are learning faster. And so as we do our health curriculum, we have to, we can't just concentrate on what content we teach when, but how are we going to talk to kids, you know, about what they're already looking at without any guidance at all? And that's what's happening right now. And we have to look at healthy kids differently, and we have to support parents so they can be actively involved. And so we're going to be developing a birth through sending kids off into the world, which is, you know, graduation, which is sort of our rite of passage into adulthood. We're going to be looking at it as a continuum. What should be discussed? And parents are going to know that up front. There's important issues. We have to talk about LGBTQ+, you know, concerns that we've never had to talk about. We have to talk about those things because kids are talking about it. It's part of their life. These things cannot be ignored, and we have to do it well. We have to do it, be informed, and we have to do it with our community. And it has to involve parents, and so we need to be open. So our health review is sort of exciting because we're looking at all these different things, and it will provide a foundation for us to actually teach kids the math and the reading and the self-respect and the vision that they need to be successful. And so this is probably the most exciting review that we've ever done. We've never done a review that involves so many different things that fit together that affect the whole student. That's why we call it the whole child, the whole community, the whole family, you know, situation. Because I don't really want to call it health, but that's really the only word we have. And we're going to be advertising in the community for membership, because we really have to change how we talk with kids. And that's an important issue. There's lots of issues that the kids are talking about, but we're not. Okay. So we're joining forces with parents to develop this comprehensive program. I'm really excited about it.
I can tell. It sounds ambitious and comprehensive, and good luck to Teresa. She's heading this up. Let's switch to vaccines. Some health experts are anticipating a COVID vaccine for kids later this fall, maybe likely before the end of the year. Last night, Dr. Anthony Fauci, who's the chief medical advisor to President Biden, said to a CNN reporter yesterday that he hopes the Pfizer vaccine will be fully approved, which means for kids, in the next 2 weeks. So the school district already mandates vaccines for various things. Will they add the COVID vaccine to that list for students, for staff, for volunteers?
The district will not. If that's what you're asking.
Yes, that's, yeah.
If I were to flip a coin what the federal government might do, we could probably flip a coin and find out what they're going to do. But like everything, we make all decisions related to health. I'm not a health expert. I read every study I have, and people send me studies that want me to read, and I read those. I love it, but I'm not a health expert. But the broader community, as I've said earlier, information from the federal government, our state, which is a lot more closer to home, and our local medical community and our families advise us on where we go. And it works. There's a wisdom in a crowd, and I don't have all the answers, but I do respect the crowd. And if it comes down to those questions, we will use the same system that has worked to make a good decision. And the good superintendent knows that true wisdom comes from a crowd, not from the superintendent all the time.
And only a wise superintendent would say something like that. You know, the humility, right?
Yes. There is a conundrum there that I can't escape from.
Let's see. We got a couple minutes. The school district has had the following policies for masking, social distancing, keeping social bubbles small, et cetera, last year. And this year, it seems like it'll probably be the same for school buildings with masking, a little bit of social distancing. However, there are some school district employees, some teachers, staff, aides, and counselors who are quite vocal, and others more passive, perhaps, in their criticism of the pandemic, some believing it a hoax, their anti-mask stance, not wearing their masks in businesses that mandate masks, anti-vaccination beliefs, and so on. So granted, teachers and staff have First Amendment rights, but is there a line as a representative of the school district and its academic community when behavior and rhetoric, you know, endangers the vulnerable in the community or the community's chances of getting out of the pandemic anytime soon?
I don't think that any of our staff has resisted what we need to do. We try to keep everybody informed what we need staff to do, what we require them to do, what we expect them to do, and we like them to know why we're doing what we do. As I learned as a secondary principal, you never make a rule that you don't want to enforce or you don't want to put the energy in. And we're not going to set up a mitigation that we can't justify or respond to. I have not had any staff members refuse to wear a mask. Many of them don't want to. They don't believe in them. And I support that. Our community is divided on that, and I respect both sides of that. But I have to do what I have to do to keep all kids safe. And there are some things where we have to do what we want to do. I will let you know there are certain components of my job that I wish I could give to Jeff Smith, assistant superintendent, and someone else. And no, I think our staff has been wonderful. We put up on our message board thanking them, and our community should thank all the work that they did. And I'm proud of them. But COVID is not going to define this next year. Yes, there's stress. Yes, there's unknown. But we've proven as a community. We had a full graduation last year. We were one of the few high schools in the state, and it was wonderful. It was a celebration of the kids. We had a prom. Nobody was doing that. We put mitigations. We are not going to be so conservative that we're not sensible, and we did a good job. Although the testing of all the prom kids, and it was sort of funny because, you know, somebody suggested that we require the kids to stand 3 feet apart at the prom, and I said, what planet are you from? You know, and, you know, kids are kids, but they did a good job. They weren't perfect in that, but they're kids. And you know what? We kept our kids healthy as a community. And, you know, anything that we were successful on, we did because the community stood behind us. We had a lot of support from the borough, the city, other agencies. Parents stepped in. I mean, we made it because we are a community. And as I said at the very start, I'm very proud. And that same community will work us through this system and help us achieve our real goals, which are academic, not COVID.
Mm-hmm. How did our village schools temper last year, and what kind of adaptations are they making for this year?
Well, we got a great rural principal, Peggy Zuyak, and we had great communities. And we've relegated, you know, the mask and the mitigations to their advisory school boards and their local governance. You know, their communities, and some of them, they don't have to wear a mask. If one of our villages says, you know, we're controlling access to our village because we have self-quarantine and we have all those in place, and if they choose not to wear a mask, I'm going to let them as a community make that decision for their schools, because those schools belong to those communities. And because they work so well together and they've put so many steps in place, I think we don't have to do that. But some of them required masks last year. Some of them didn't. Some did at certain times and didn't at other times. So, yeah, I have great faith in our communities, and I have great faith in their ability to share what they want and don't want. And our goals in our rural schools are the same as in town, to graduate kids who are fully ready for the world and to have a vision and to be able to accomplish it. No different than town.
Recruiting and retaining teachers to Alaska, and especially Kodiak, is a perennial struggle for school districts, especially during the pandemic. So how is the hiring picture looking for the school district right now? And have you had to change recruiting strategies over the past year?
Well, I'll jump into this question and then defer to others in the room. But I would say that we still have some vacant positions that we are still recruiting for. We are still looking for many paraprofessionals. We are still looking for many folks in the community that are interested in substitute teaching, whether that be on a long-term basis or a short-term basis. And both of those pools really come from the community within. In terms of our certified teaching ranks, a lot of times we are recruiting off-island and out-of-state primarily. Last year, I think we had more applicants from within state, it appears, than we've had in recent years in many of our positions. We still were able to recruit folks from out of state as well. But those efforts changed dramatically. There wasn't a lot of in-person job fairs that we've attended in the past. Those were all canceled, in the lower 48 and in the state of Alaska as well. So there was a lot of online job fairs, a lot of recruitment that was done, virtually. It was definitely different than how it's been done in the past. And it certainly presented challenges. Certainly excited about the number of new teachers that we have hired right now. I believe that number is somewhere in the mid-30s. And again, we have a handful of positions that we are still advertising and still looking to fill. And I do believe we have applicants for many of those positions as well. I think in July, the Alaska Teacher Placement held their first in-person job fair in a year and a half. And that was in the middle of July. But prior to that, everything had been shelved since, 2019, mm-hmm. The fall fair. So
I think part of the recruiting process is a good old-fashioned pitch. So I'm just going to run down the list of current
vacancies. What's your elevator pitch?
That we have. we're currently looking for a health teacher at the middle school, an alternative school teacher. We have an English opening, a PE opening, a nurse opening. Facilities director we're looking for, and we have numerous aid positions across buildings that are currently vacant as well. So all of those jobs are posted on the KIBSD website. If you go to the employment tab, that's where you see those jobs and where you can actively apply for them. I also encourage anyone in our community to consider becoming an active member of the team by becoming a substitute teacher. There's quite a bit of flexibility in that opportunity. You can kind of, I get a lot of people who ask me questions about subbing, like, I'm intimidated by the high school, or they want to sub only in their child's school, or something like
Don't
that.
Don't be intimidated by the high school. Well, they are fantastic.
They are fabulous. They are fantastic. But they may not be ready to jump into that age level or whatever. So I think there's lots of flexibility with that. You need to have a high school diploma to qualify, and good references and a good solid background check, those items. But I just would encourage people to get on that particular level of teaming with the school district. You could work one day a week, that kind of thing. So that really helps us out tremendously. So recruiting, it's nonstop. Mm-hmm.
Well, at the risk of sabotaging that wonderful pitch that you just had, there is one sticky question that has come up that we feel like we need to address. The school district has had its share of controversy the past few years related to aides, volunteers, coaches, teachers mm-hmm. taking advantage of students, and some of these cases have recently resulted in criminal charges. What is the school district doing to help ensure the safety of kids and their staff and volunteers? What else needs to be done?
Well, it's a good question, and I think that we're have really taken a close look at our inboarding, our review of candidates. We've always, completed background checks, and we're spending a lot more time training staff members on appropriate conduct. What you would think people should know, we're making sure that they will know. And so a lot of review. We think we've had good procedures in place. And all I would say is sometimes things happen because we're a district with almost 500 employees. And I think that the indication of whatever is you've read about is more of a random than causal. But even so, when anytime anything happens, it forces us complete review of what we do, how we train, and to provide as much surety as you can with 500 employees. So it's just something that we need to work through and let the legal system follow its course. But I would say up front, any conduct by an individual person, true or not, or doesn't reflect on our staff or our commitment and who we are. And it didn't define us, it doesn't define us, and we're going forward and letting the process work as those things are reviewed.
All right, I think, unless Dylan has done, we have just a couple more questions. What were the successes that you saw last year that you hope to carry forward to this year?
I would say the first thing for me that comes to mind is the partnerships with the community and with our parents in general. I think that parents really stepped up to support their students when they were at home, having to learn from home and not in the building. I think that was an incredible partnership, and I really look forward to maintaining that and fostering that further. The other thing that stood out to me is for the first time we had consistent translation services and interpretation services for families in the community, and making sure that that was available to all of those families in need. And I think that was a step in the right direction, and a step that is very clear that we need to maintain for equity for all of our students. And the other thing that stood out to me last year, I had the opportunity to observe a couple of lessons taught by some of our staff with students at home. And I was just amazed and blown away by the engagement from students, and we're talking young students, with the staff members that were working with them and the parents that are in the background supporting their student when they were off task. It just blew me away. Mm-hmm. And I think those were all positive things that certainly attributed to the success that as a community, I believe we experienced last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was nothing like watching kids get to come back to school in January. There's always the first day of school sort of enthusiastic wave mm-hmm. that comes in, and for those of us who chose education as a path, you're that's what fuels you, right?
Yeah, it's almost addicting.
It really is pretty incredible, and that was like magnified by 100. Mm-hmm. It was incredible that the smiles that you can see in people's eyes, even though they're masked, just getting to come back to the buildings and see their friends and see their trusted adults and kind of the layers that fed that for each other. It was like fuel, kind of, throughout the spring. And I anticipate that being there this fall because we now know what it feels like not to have that structure and stability. We're that much more grateful for it, I think. Hmm. And that really translated down to even our youngest kiddos. So it's powerful. And if we can use that together to kind of accelerate learning and not think of it as we're behind and more think about as where we need to go together, I think we can harness it, and it's going to be a great year.
I will say that the drama club, we did defend our state title in drama last year, so we hope we can do it again. It's pretty rare someone can do it 3 years in a row, but
nice humble brag.
That's awesome.
I was being a wise leader right there.
Good work.
And then any of the unique challenges do you foresee for this year?
Well, there are probably many, but, you know, last year was a stressful year for everyone. It's a great year in some ways, but stressful. And I think it's sort of like we had a chance to examine our system in a different light because of COVID and because of the stress. It's sort of like, you know, when the tide goes out, you see rocks that you didn't even know existed. You go, oh my goodness, you know, I could have hit that rock, or that rock has been there all along. And we've seen things in our system that we need to change. We need to communicate better with our parents. We're not going to lose that. We need to communicate better with parents who don't speak English as their first language. We need to become a better advocate whose parents don't feel comfortable advocating for their kids or understanding it. We need to provide more information about what kids are talking about and doing about so they can become aware. And it all comes down to, as I said at the start, you know, our concern with equity. We want to serve every student, and we've seen areas that we don't, and we don't want to forget that. And that will be how we're different in the future, and we don't want to let go. And honestly, we haven't really had a long chance, a chance to sit down with our staff and our families really discuss what they've seen and what they've learned, and to bring them together and try to make systemic change. It's certainly not good enough for Jeff and Kim and I in our leadership positions to realize these needs. They have to be accepted and understood by the community and then integrated in how we do business, or we'll just lose them. Mm-hmm. And we can't let that happen.
All right, well, I think that's just about our time. Anything else that you'd like to add or plug before we sign off?
I have one quick one. Our responsibility during an earthquake is to take care of hundreds of people that come into our shelters. And Jeff and Kim were right there taking care of hundreds, you know, that came into our high school and then some at North Star. And, you know, we're sort of feeling all alone there. And we really love doing it because we get to see so many people in our community. And I just want to take the opportunity to thank KMXT. Mm-hmm. Because your broadcast during that time informed us. We knew what was going on because, you know, if we don't know what's going on, how do we help people that don't speak English? And I will say this very quickly. I had the opportunity because Trident, you know, we had a deal ahead of time where they could isolate their workforce so they wouldn't. And right. We had that set up, and many of them were in our brand new gym. And I had the opportunity, and I'm going to get teary here because it was really a big thing for me. And Kim did too, and Jeff, they were down there to meet people from the Sudan, from Macedonia, from Serbia, from the Ukraine, from the Philippines, from Southeast Asia, who were gathered in that room in small little language groups, and to talk to them, and they were so grateful, and some of the information. And I just, you know, how I will be different from that is that I saw these workers for the first time, the fear, and we were taking care of them, and they were so grateful. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it's a different story, but I can't be here without saying is that I hope our community can meet these people that are here and see them. And we saw them, it's safe to say, isn't it, Kim? And it was just so great. But anyway, KMXT gave us the information that we needed to calm them down because they were worried about a wave taking out the high school and different things. And anyway, that's a really good part of our job.
We could probably arrange a fake tsunami warning just to do a meet and greet with...
let's not do that.
Okay.
But in particular, I would like to follow that up and plug Pam Foreman, without whom we would not be able to do that fantastic tsunami coverage. So,
Kim and Jeff?
I have one final thing that completely pales in comparison to that end, but if I don't say it, my principal colleagues will never forgive me, I fear. And that is, if you haven't enrolled your child for school, re-enrolled them, or enrolled them for the first time because you're new to our island, that is very helpful. The earlier that happens, the faster we can build staffing and we can make adjustments within our school buildings. So if you need any help, there's assistance available at the central office between 10 and 1 every day. You can call 486-7550 to get hooked up with the right person to help you through. That process can be challenging sometimes. So I would just encourage you to call. And then school buildings will have secretaries and will be open on the 16th. So I'm hearing that question a lot. Excuse me. I'm hearing that question a lot. If you're needing to drop off immunization records or your birth certificates, that sort of thing, that can happen on the 16th. So thank you for that. And sorry to make it go a different direction.
I would actually say that that is of similar importance to the earthquake.
I would just take the opportunity one more time to let folks in the community know if they are interested in substituting, whether that's one day a week or 5 days a week or for a three-month leave for somebody. Again, you could call that same number, 486-7550. We'd be more than happy and welcoming to take your application and provide the proper training so that you're prepared to step into the classroom. It's an incredible opportunity and certainly hope folks take advantage of it.
All right, well...
thank you guys all so very much for coming on. It really makes Jared and my job a lot easier in so far as informing people and getting information out there about this pandemic and how we're responding to it locally. It means a lot that you guys are in here and putting in the time to get this information out.
Yes, thank you for sharing your time and your knowledge. Thank you to Dr. Larry Ledoux, Superintendent of Schools, Jeff Smith, Assistant Superintendent of Schools, and Kim Saunders, Director of Special Services from the Kodiak Island Borough School District. Thanks again for joining us on on The Lowdown, and we'll see you in school.
Thank you.